So let's jump into our finances tonight. I was told years ago that military members in the U.S. are struggling the most with financial problems. Over 50% of them are in over their heads in debt. And it kind of makes sense. You know, you got young person going into the military, fresh out of high school, and say, here's a signing bonus, and then all this stuff. And what do the young guys usually do when you give them a few grand? They go buy a car. They buy something nice, jump into debt, and now in the military situation, if you don't learn how to handle finances, it just gets worse and worse. And then we've got our college age set. What are they always taught? For your needs, get that little piece of plastic and start building up credit. But if you give somebody without solid skills a tool like that, what's going to happen? It's going to get mismanaged, and then they run into years and years worth of consequences. Same situation with college debt. It takes on average 10 years to work off your college debt after you graduate. So you've got a young person who is just fresh out, trying to get a career, which means you're not going to get the best pay, and they've got car debt, and they've got college debt, and they're trying to make it in this world, and then if they're blessed enough to get married, now you got two people that are in the same boat in trouble. So it's a recipe for disaster, because generally we do not prepare our young people financially. We do a lot to make sure they're healthy and provided for, but to sit down and say, all right, you got a paycheck, here's what you do with it, starting very, very young. I was looking at my own life, just thinking over these principles, and on my way to church tonight, it's like, well, I started working when I was 10 years old, started pushing a mower, and all the financial mistakes that I made from age 10 all the way up until I took off for college, thank the Lord I had some savings for when I went off to school, because the paycheck I earned during college semesters went straight to my school bill. And so the only thing I had literally to live on were my savings. And so watching that number just shrink throughout the semester and then getting back to the next summer break where you can get out and work and build that savings up again for the next year of college where it just keeps shrinking, you start to learn lessons the hard way. And so I'm looking at my kids now working, savings, checking account. I was like, guys, let's learn some principles here. You've got to be planning for the future. That's the reason I said, I'm not buying you a car. Not that I could. I said, if you want a car, you better start thinking about it, because if you're going to get a license in the next couple of years, you better be ready. So Andrew's already got his savings set up so that he's able to buy his first car already. Doesn't even have his license yet. But he's set. Very proud of him. I said, Shay, you like trucks? He's like, yeah, I want a Jeep. I said, okay. Start pricing those puppies out, because if you have a goal, you're going to need to start saving for that. I'm not saying you can't get a Jeep. I'm just saying save up for one, because that's how it's going to happen. So we all make tons of mistakes in the financial realm to become responsible. But if we have guidance, all of those difficult lessons can be either shortened or erased based on somebody else's help. So what we're looking here in the book of Proverbs is an actual, just absolute treasure trove of good advice that most people have no clue about, literally. Financial literacy is very small. I was listening on the radio the other day, and they're saying a huge percentage of college students feel very inadequate as far as financial understanding, and they just wish somebody would sit down and teach them. So some of the basic money management classes are being taken. But I'm wondering, in all these schools, how many of them are going to be using these principles? I was talking with my dad today, just kind of going over some of these things. Since they're not here, they're in an HOA meeting tonight. That sounds like fun. They said, well, what are we going to be missing? I said, well, we're going over the finances section of Proverbs. Oh, man, that's really great. But just a lot of people just don't have common sense nowadays. I said, well, let's examine that remark for just a second. What is common sense? For most people nowadays, when it comes to finances, common sense is go out and get a car loan with the lowest possible interest rate. Well, that's common sense. But you look at the Bible and said, that's foolish sense. Don't even get into debt. So the common sense of our day is mistaken sense. But they think they're doing their mistakes the most efficient way, even though they're mistakes. They don't see them as such. So the principles that we have learned through reading the book of Proverbs are uncommon, to be sure. But they work. So part of the mentoring that I'm encouraging you guys to do could definitely include, and really should include, passing on financial advice to younger people. Amazing. Absolutely amazing stuff. So what I'd like to do tonight is how many of you guys were able to actually get through the entire book of Proverbs and write down the verses that have to do with finances? That's a pretty big assignment, I'll be honest with you. 31 chapters. We had one person in here that did it besides me. So that is totally understandable. That is a lot to go through. That basically is just a rundown of what I do when I study through things. Read the entire thing, write down everything pertaining to the subject we're dealing with, categorize them, and try to analyze. Book of Proverbs takes a lot of work, but it's worth it. What I wanted to also do is find out what titles, what different categories of subjects did you find in the book of Proverbs that have to do with finances. There are a lot of different principles that you could group these verses under. Give me some of the titles that you guys gave for some of these verses. Go ahead and just shout them out, Pastor. Giving. How many did you have, by the way? Four. Okay. What are they? Okay. Surety. You guys know what surety is? That's one of those words I had to look up. Anybody able to give me a definition for surety? Joe? Co-signing. That's what we call it nowadays. That is a big temptation, typically with family. Person A does not have the trust of a lending system. Like, we don't trust you, but if you find someone we do trust to sign onto your loan, then we'll loan it to you, because when you default, like we think you will, we're going after the person we trust. It's like, well, for a family member, it's like, I'll trust them. I'll help them out here. That seems like a noble thing to do. How many times in the book of Proverbs does it say, do not co-sign, do not be surety for somebody else's debt? Multiple times, what, two or three times at least. It seems like a noble thing to do, but God's saying, do not do something like that. So saving, giving, debt, surety, those are four of the big ones. Anybody else have any specific titles, categories they came up with? Okay, not a problem. Hopefully you've got this next one down, though, as far as what were three of the most helpful or useful verses and principles that you found regarding finances in the book of Proverbs. So who's willing to give me the first of their top three that they found? Or did I just give you a huge assignment and got everybody scared and you didn't do it? Quite possibly. All right, so I'm going to give you one. Kelly, 30, 25, and 26, which say, the ants are a people not strong. Are you sure it's 35? Oh, I'm sorry, I'm looking at 25, my bad. There we go, 30 verse 5. Shouldn't be that one. It's very, very close, though. 7 and 8 and 9. There we go. Two things have I required of thee. Deny me not them before I die. Remove me far from vanity and lies. Give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with food convenient for me, lest I be full and deny thee and say, who's the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the name of my God in vain. So having that sweet balance point of not being dependent and angry with God, but not having too much and not thinking you need God. That's a great verse right there. Excellent. What are some other ones you had, Kelly? It has a lot to do with it. You are correct. And Proverbs 31, lady, definitely has it for sure. That's actually going to be our next study. So you're quite ahead on that one. Excellent. Anybody else? What are some main verses that you came up with? Randy? Well, if you're going to keep up with the Joneses, you got to have the tools to do so. I think that is very valid for sure. Good thought into that one. Do you have any others? That one? That's a fantastic one right there. Bruce, what'd you have? Now, can I trust your judgment? Do you ever work with money at all? So not try to rack up the shiny stuff, huh? Very good. Well, there's something to say for just being content with what you have, living a simple life. And that's very well worth it. Excellent. What else? What other you guys had verses that really were principles that helped you out, Pastor? 22:7. The rich ruleth over the poor, and the borrower is servant to the lender. Famous, but our society seems to have forgotten that one. Except for the people that are the holder of all the servants. They know it quite well, and they use it to their advantage. Wow. All right. Anybody else? Verses that really were helpful to you financially from the book of Proverbs. 3:9-10, which say, honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. Absolutely. Giving God first cut is really important, because then everything that comes in, automatically you're thinking of it a certain way. First thing, God gets his cut. Old Testament, it was an automatic 10%. New Testament, you're never actually given a percentage. But what I like to encourage my kids, the youth group for years, I said, what do you want to give? What percentage would be a good reflection of your gratitude? If you are honestly thankful and you say 5%, that would reflect my gratitude. Then give 5%, because God loveth a cheerful giver, not a grudging giver. I think 10% is a really good place to start, personally. But you shouldn't be limited to, well, this is all I have to do. Well, what if you're thankful and give more? You think God's going to be like, well, that's a horrible idea. Not really. I think God's just going to bless you in proportion, as long as you're being wise. But giving God that first percentage is definitely a key principle. That's one of my top three as well. That's one of the things I tried to learn early on. It's easy for kids not to do it. You know, we're expected, adults are supposed to do that. No, anybody and everybody ought to do that. Excellent. Anybody else have any? Joe. 23:5, which says, yeah, I actually said that lying to get gain is a game played by people who are basically going to get themselves killed. And then a just balance, that ethical business practice is absolutely huge, because if you go to unethical means to get your wealth, Proverbs says, then God's just going to store up what you make for somebody else who's going to be generous to the poor. So, yeah, you think you're going to hold it, but you're not. It's actually going to go to somebody who's going to use it properly. So that is a huge one right there, for sure. So don't get too fixed on something that's not going to stay anyway. Excellent. Anybody else?
Proverbs 6:6-8.
Go to the ant, thou sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which, having no guide, overseer, or ruler, provideth her meat in the summer and gathereth her food in the harvest. So there's a lot of different principles you can pull out of that. What did you focus on specifically? Preparing and investing for the future. Yeah. See, if you got opportunity now, you better take it, because that opportunity won't be there later. And our economy is about to find that out like we've not seen in a long time. So I hope you guys are not doom and glooming it, but you're being realistic with it. Because all the financial signs, there's a lot of very wealthy people that are making moves right now that we ought to pay attention to. And folks tightening the belt and preparing in certain ways. It's coming. But you have to do the math and you have to plan and work that through, because it is more advantageous. A great comparison of that is, I don't know if you've ever noticed that gas stations charge crazy prices for the little things. And you'll notice certain people, depending on what neighborhood or economic structure or societal structure is there, gas stations actually sell grocery stuff, but they're the worst prices. But who go there? People that don't manage well. So I'll see folks walk in, because they typically don't drive in. They walk in, walk out with a couple of bags full of basic groceries, and then walk back to their house. I'm thinking, what did they just drop just for bread, eggs, and milk? Huge bags of chips and soda. It's mostly chips and soda. It's like you start to see a pattern. I was like, okay, you're not driving. You're spending way too much. I'm seeing what you're purchasing. So you start to get an idea. This person has not learned to manage. And every time we go into a gas station to get gas and stuff, my kids are like, can I get a candy? Can I get a soda? I'm like, sure you can if you buy it. But look at the price. For that one 20-ounce, how much could you get at Walmart? And they start thinking it through. I'm like, those are the kind of lessons I want to pass on to my kids. Go ahead, make a mistake, but I will warn you first, and then I'll let you make the mistake. It's up to you. Now, my youngest ones, they don't care. They still haven't really figured out the value of a dollar yet. Wow, 7-11. Convenience. It will make money from lazy people for sure. Wow. All right, any other major ones you guys have come up with? This is good. Oh, it definitely is not.
Right, so yeah. Anyway,
yeah. There was so much in the book of Proverbs about ethics and about character. That's what, for me, made it difficult just to stick on the financial verses, because your character goes so much into your finances. And so it's easy to cross those lines because they had so much to do with each other. And it is amazing how a person can live if you're just willing to drop your pride. You know, leeching off the government, no problem. In fact, that's desirable, because then you can stay home and play video games all day. You know, which a lot of America does. You know, less than half of us actually pay taxes. That kind of ticks me off, because that means I'm paying for somebody else. You know, so it's frustrating. But if you have no pride, if you have no work ethic, you have no character, I don't see what the problem is. Like, wow, how could you not see the problem? Well, it's this foundation. And those things go hand in hand, for sure. Anybody else? Proverbs 11, 24, and 25. Let's see, 11, 24, and 25 say, there is that scattereth and yet increaseth, and there is that withholdeth more than is meet, more than is good, but it tendeth to poverty. So the liberal soul shall be made fat, and he that watereth shall be watered also himself. God tells us also in Proverbs that if you give unto the poor, you're actually lending to the Lord. So if you're giving to the right places, God says, I can trust you, and I'm going to bless you. So every time you give to a worthy cause, don't worry about it. God's going to bring it back somehow. Whether it could be straight up financial return, or in something that is a lot more valuable than a dollar put in to a charity or whatnot. Of course, that then invites a whole discussion about discernment and not just throwing money at somebody that looks like they need it, because they may not. You have to be careful not to get taken. But then, because of being taken, you don't want to become cynical and not help anybody. So it can be kind of a crazy ball of wax. America is one of the most generous nations in the world, without a doubt. But sadly, we also tend to be very unintelligent in our giving, because we feel really good about just throwing money at something, and we're not being very careful to make sure that money is being well spent. That has sadly been a big concern with what's going on in Ukraine right now. Is so much of the money that's funneling in there, do we know for sure that it's going to help people, like folks have said? Or is it going to corrupt government officials? When we were there in Odessa a few years ago, they were telling us about all of the corruption in that nation. They're like, we actually have one of the most corrupt nations in the world. I'm like, well, that's kind of a big boast. So all of a sudden now the country's in a spot where they need some help. They could definitely use it, but you've got a lot of corrupt officials who are like, yes, have pity on us, and say it with green, and they will gladly manage that process. I'd like some accountability. You know, if I'm going to be generous, I want to make sure things are happening properly. Well, that could be happening with the guy in the street corner that's holding a sign that said, we'll work for food. who we offer him a job, he's like, get away from me. Like, I thought you needed help. One of my favorite stories of being in Pensacola, Florida, we'd go down and try to share the gospel downtown on Friday nights, and we got a lot of panhandlers down there. And so you just kind of learn to deal with them, but I was trying to help guys learn a little bit. And they were generous. They want to be able to share the gospel, so they're willing to give, you know, college students what little they had. One day we had a guy, just as soon as we got downtown, I parked my car, and he was there waiting for us. He's like, man, I just need some change. I need to get a call and get my brother to come down and get me, and I'm in a bad spot. Do you have any change? I said, absolutely. So I pulled out my ashtray. It was full of change. He's like, man, thank you. I really appreciate it. I said, you bet. Come on. He's like, what are you talking about? I said, well, there's a payphone right there. Let's go get you that call. He's like, man, you don't want to help me. I said, yeah, I do. Here's the change. There's the phone. Let's get you that call. Man, you all a bunch of the same people. You don't want to help nobody. I was like, sir, I actually chased him down the street. I'm like, let's get you the call. I was like, I'm sick of this. These people were all just trying to sucker, well, a bunch of naive guys. Well, some of us had figured things out. It's like, you know what? Let's not get cynical. Let's help people. And a buddy of mine was real smart. He would bring money for Subway. We knew where the Subway was downtown. So some guy says, man, I'm hungry. I just haven't eaten. I said, all right, tell you what. I'm going to take you in, and we're going to get Subway together and sit down and eat together and share the gospel instead of just handing somebody some money that you don't know what the money's going for. So, yes, we need to be generous. Yes, we need to be willing to let go of our hard-earned money that God's blessed us with, but be discerning with how we do it and be careful. So there's a lot of factors that go into it, but I think because of the learning process, it can get really hard, and we could back away from being giving and get too cynical. Bible says, no, don't get cynical, because if you turn away your ears from the poor, Bible says there's a curse that comes upon you and your needs won't get met. So finding that balance between saving and generosity, being wise and trusting God, that it's a process of growth. But thank the Lord, he's given us the principles that we need to go by to get down that road. So, Joe. That's very true. And especially that had to do with helping folks within the church. You know, because you're always going to have that in life, but that is a mark as well, for sure. Well, that's the teach a man to fish, feed him for a day. Or, I'm sorry, give a man a fish, feed him for a day, teach a man to fish, feed him for a lifetime. That's a part of it as well. So a lot of those cute little sayings actually have biblical roots to them. Any other verses? All right, well, we've only got about 17 minutes left. Let me direct you. You guys actually took my main ones that God has used to shape my financial journey. I'd love to say that it's been wise the entire time, but it has not. Let's go to chapter 20, verse 21. I had my main three and then a bunch of honorable mentions. Some other things that throughout the years, the main three for me have always guided our finances. Some of these other ones have been ones that have come along and just shaped some of the finer uses of wealth. Chapter 20, verse 21 says, an inheritance may be gotten hastily at the beginning, but the end thereof shall not be blessed. So anything that promises that can turn a quick dollar, I have learned to say, wait a minute, I'm a little suspicious of this. The more you get into investing, all these investing advisors say, hey, we've got the next best stock pick for you. Look at the percentages of other people we've helped and grown their wealth. Even within 12 months, things have exploded 200%. Maybe. What they don't show you is the rest of the chart where that 200% would barrel straight back down. So just because you can make a quick dollar in the end, it's not going to be worth it. Before the days of the expanded internet we have, back in the MySpace days and the chain mail emails that you used to get, I don't know if you guys ever saw the advertisement that you can make $1,000 a week through a very simple plan, and it only cost you, I think it was like $5, that they'll send you the information of how this can be done. I'd seen so many of these things, like, I got $5, I got to try this. So according to the instructions, you mail that $5 to this address, and they will mail you back the plan to do it. I was like, okay. So the letter I got back was putting out on an advertisement saying that you can make $1,000 a week by having people send you $5 to your address. I'm like, that is beautiful. Wow. I got suckered. This is great. But it was hilarious because, like, I'm so curious. What is this $1,000 a week? Well, if you send out enough advertising and enough people are suckers, you can make $1,000 a week. So, like, that is amazing. You might be able to make some fast money, but I wonder what's going to happen a few years down the road. Because typically people that are not good money managers now, if you give them a bunch of money, they're going to blow it all. Having a lot given to you does not magically make you better with money. The people that barely are making it and yet go to the 7-Eleven and buy lottery tickets and happen to hit it big, most times that completely wrecks their lives. I've read story after story of people that have won the lottery and wish that they had never won because it ruined them. If you weren't a good manager before, you're not going to be a good manager after you get a bunch of money. It'll typically wreck you. Yeah, athletes, pop stars, the next big music group, absolutely. I was reading or starting to collect articles of these young musicians that have made it big, huge contracts and are dead within a couple of years. Dead. Because all of the money and all of the fame and all the excitement, they end up getting into groups of doing things that get themselves killed. The alcohol, the drugs, the wild lifestyle. Money ruined them. But it's management. It's so many different factors. So these lessons literally shape your life. But if it's going to be gotten quickly, don't trust it. It's going to wreck you. Definitely going to wreck you. Let's go to chapter 28, verse 20. I'm going to leave a few minutes at the end of the night, kind of do a promo of the next study we're going to go through out of Proverbs for a while. So Skylar will be happy. I don't have to go through Proverbs too much longer. 28:20 says, "A faithful man shall abound with blessings, but he that maketh haste to be rich shall not be innocent." We've already talked tonight about everybody's got to have it quick. Have it now. Credit allows you to get things immediately. But if you are making haste to be wealthy, you will not be innocent. That speaks of your willingness to do unethical things in order to advance quickly. That promise of making a good return can tempt us to drop our morals and the manner in which we do things. Decisions to take advantage of somebody or skirt the ethical rule book or do whatever. So a lot of times that impatience is what would take a fairly solid individual and twist them to do something they never would have done. It's a dangerous thing. Impatience ruins so much and will definitely do that in the world of finance. We've already hit on that one. Chapter 21, verse 20. This was one of my big threes, and I had to learn it the hard way, of course. 21:20 says, "There is treasure to be desired and oil in the dwelling of the wise." So valuable things and supplies in the dwelling of the wise. "But a foolish man spendeth it up." This doesn't just speak of saving. This actually speaks also of management. So we went through Financial Peace here a number of years ago. We've been through it a few times at our church, Dave Ramsey plan. Financial stuff, mostly all based on the book of Proverbs, believe it or not. but telling every single dollar where to go. It blows my mind to meet people who have money coming into their home, but they don't have a set plan. And I didn't. I had a basic plan, a general plan, but not telling every single dollar where to go. That takes a lot of work. In fact, that also takes sitting down with your spouse and agreeing on it. Oh, I don't want to have that discussion. You know what? You got to have that discussion. You've got to be on the same page. Because otherwise, one person's working in one direction, the other person's working in another, and there's nothing but conflict. So having a plan set with every single dollar written down leads to totally different decisions being made, preparation for the future, curbing what we could be doing right now because it wouldn't be expedient for next week or for next year. That type of strict money management totally changed the way I look at things instead of just having a loose budget. There's a lot more security in having a set plan. Praise the Lord for it. If I just read a little more Proverbs, I probably would have learned that a lot faster. Chapter 27, verse 23. This goes along with that concept. And this is one I'm still learning about. 27:23, we actually roll to the bottom of the chapter. Be thou diligent to know the state of thy flocks and look well to thy herds. So manage well what you have going on right now. Verse 24, for riches are not forever, and doth the crown endure to every generation? So riches aren't always going to be there. This thriving bull economy, that might go bear one of these days. Oop, what just happened? We're now in a bear economy. Things have changed up. And doth the crown endure to every generation? Maybe the leadership in your area is going to change one of these days, and that's going to change the economic situation. Do we know what that's like in America right now? Whew, wow. Proverbs is ringing true. Verse 25, the hay appeareth, the tender grass showeth itself, herbs of the mountain are gathered, the lambs are for thy clothing, and the goats are for the price of the field. So you have different aspects of your business that supply other aspects. Verse 27, and thou shalt have goat's milk enough for thy food, and for the food of thy household, and for the maintenance for thy maidens. Basically, you need to learn to diversify your assets. If you've got goats, if you've got sheep, if you've got fields, you've got properties, you manage all these different things so that you have different areas of your life supplied. Now, we have a slightly different culture typically in America where we go to a job location, work, get a paycheck, and come home, and we have to diversify our paycheck. This was the day where you had different things that you invest yourself in to supply those needs at home. There's a bit more work. But if you're not willing to look at the widespread aspects of your different family needs, something's going to be found lacking. So learning to diversify and plan, again, is a lot of work. And again, it takes a lot of communication with your spouse, and you got to be on the same page. But it leads to a much more secure situation. It is worth the effort. All right, a few minutes left here. Chapter 10, verse 22. Let's finish with this one. Quite a few years ago, actually, I was taking the teen Sunday school through the teen version of Financial Peace, Dave Ramsey's stuff. It's called Generation Change. And I said, you know what? These principles are fantastic. But what would it look like in real life? So I sat down and I wrote a budget for what if you were a teenager and you're working realistic minimum wage for realistic hours in high school. What could you do with it? Because young people are looking at possible education at college. They're looking at vehicles. So I wrote up a budget and said, you know what? You could actually, if you wanted, save up for your own car, pay for your own cell phone bill, and start saving for college, and have your first day of college paid for before you even walked in the first day of class. It is possible to do that. And then that got me thinking, well, what about through the college years? That budget would very much change. So what if a college student was working realistic hours with realistic class load? What would that budget look like? So I built another one. And then I built another one for outside after you graduate college. What does that look like realistically with now paying for your utilities, now paying for all these other things? And then what about, ooh, hey, when you get married and there's two incomes before kids, what would that look like? So I had four different budgets. I said, now this is if you followed the financial plan that Scripture lays out of being patient and saving and frugal, wow, you could graduate college debt-free. You could have your own car paid off and never be in car debt. You could have savings set aside to start your first house. You could be giving toward missions in high school. You could be doing all these things, but that's not the norm. So then alongside to mirror each one of those budgets, I said, here's what people normally do. Let's go ahead and get you a car debt right in high school. Let's go ahead and get that car debt and college debt. Let's go ahead and get that home debt. And let's combine your debt and your spouse's debt once you get married. Can you do all these things? Could you be free? Could you give toward missions? Could you have savings and emergency funds? Could you do all this stuff? No. Both of those things look vastly different. I've had a few teenagers say, Pastor Colley, can I have a copy of that? And they actually followed it. And they graduated college debt-free. So cool. Not been in car debt. And now they're married and living debt-free. I was like, that's cool. The Bible stuff works. And I've had a number of young people say, can I have a copy of that? That's cool. And things are very different for them. But that's us, folks. We can choose to live by these principles and do what's tough and smart and godly, and we'll have a very, very different future. But that's not normal. Chapter 10, verse 22 says this, the blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. I love that verse because there are things that God blesses us with that are so far more valuable than a huge 401k and a ton of money in the bank. So many people that have built up wealth are miserable, even though they have the goals that they were pursuing for years and years and years and years and years. They've got it. But they're still not happy. And you've got people that have very little, but they actually love life because there are blessings that God gives. It doesn't have sorrow attached to it. But we've got to recognize what's valuable and what's not, what's worth pursuing and what's not, how to manage what God has blessed us with and not get sidetracked and disillusioned with things that will actually wreck our lives. So God's word not only gives us the how, folks, financially in the book of Proverbs, but also the why. We got to be careful of these things. So the love of money is the root of all evil. So that'll definitely take you down a bad track. But also the mismanagement of money will lead you down a bad. You don't even have to love it. You just have to mismanage it, and you'll wreck yourself as well. So much to go over, but you guys have done a good job tonight. And your next sheet, this may well be our last Proverbs study, and it is much, much smaller than the Proverbs one with finances, okay? That was a pretty big chunk of stuff to go over. As you leave, if you did not get one of these pink sheets, I'd like you to read over Proverbs 31, verses 10 through 31. This is talking about that Proverbs 31 woman. But here's the challenge for you. I want you to summarize each verse. It's not a whole lot, 21 verses, and just fill in, summarize in your own words what that specific verse is saying about this woman. You're going to get a lot of different areas of life. And there is, I believe, a reason why these areas are highlighted. After you go through it, just summarize each one. And I've got four questions for you at the bottom to help you start to think through what has been said. Absolutely amazing woman. This kind of woman is able to be found for sure. God blesses those of us who do not deserve it, men, with women like this. But learning to recognize what this kind of lady looks like is valuable for a young man, to be sure. So we'll come in and talk about that next week. So you guys have had a good amount of Proverbs for the last month and a half here, 2 months. And I think you've got the tools in your possession now that if you wanted to study one of those other topics in this book that we've not gone over, you are fully able to do so. Run through the book, write down all the verses that have to do with that topic, then look at that group, start to analyze and see it, and you're going to keep growing. I would encourage you constantly go through the book of Proverbs. Every once in a while, or just a little bit every day or every week, stay in the book. It is well worth it. So after we finish that one next week, dealing with the Proverbs 31 woman, we're going to take a very different direction. And I was approached weeks and weeks ago by somebody who says, yeah, I really don't feel like we're preparing ourselves well to be able to answer folks that don't agree like we do as far as Christianity, as far as the Bible, as far as doctrine. Just don't feel prepared to handle those conversations. So you're talking about apologetics, you're talking about theology, is really understanding the basics of what the Bible says. So that is the end goal, but before you get there, you got to know where you came from. So we're going to do a short history of where the Baptist church came from. And most people think it's from the Reformation, and that is totally not true. We're going to be looking at a fantastic, very small book that I read years ago, and I put it into lesson form for you. So if you like history, this is going to be phenomenal. If you like politics, this is going to be right down your alley. But if you want to know what your Baptist forefathers went through to become what we are today, if you want to know where we came from and why this belief system that you've been taught and raised under is so unique all throughout history, you're going to need this because it will shock you. And if you actually pull out a few little historical dates when you're talking with folks, they'll be like, what? Oh, yeah. We're not part of the church. We're not Lutheran. We're not Methodist. We're not a branch off from the Catholics. We are this. We're not Protestant. Okay. We're going to show you what we is. And what we is awesome. So we're going to go through that history in about 2 weeks, Lord willing. But next week, let's go over this Proverbs 31 woman. Let's pray. Father, I love you. I thank you for the depth of your word, the practicality of your word. Lord, you prepare us for so many areas of life because you want to use us in all these different areas to be a blessing to the world, to show your glory, to show a different life. Lord, to use us to reach out in ways that we couldn't if we were living selfishly. Father, help us to organize ourselves financially in a biblical way that honors you, puts you first, and looks at this world as a way to be generous toward. Father, help us to get our own houses in order so that we can be that blessing for your name. We love you and thank you in the name of Christ. Amen.